people and places. With your hosts, Brad Vanjore, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
Hey, Shift and Steer, it's another episode, and it's a little bit of a mashup because Aaron is not in the studio. We're not even in the studio. Hell, we're at Radwood, which I like to refer to as Bradwood, but it's a show in Anaheim that is cars from the 80s through 1999. It's a pretty fun, pretty cool deal where everybody dresses era, acts era, and you know, I even saw a little bit of illicit drug use today. I got to say, it was quite the 80s scene. But I'm here. We are sitting at the Phoenix Club, which is where the show was held. We're sitting in the bar right now, and I'm with Matt the Motorator DeAndrea.
Hello, sir.
How you doing today, man?
Good.
You feeling kind of 80s, 90s?
Yeah, I'm having a couple of cocktails, having a good time.
I know. It's a little bit of a different vibe for Shift and Steer.
It's good.
But we do not condone drinking and driving. Drinking and driving is not funny. It's not good. It's not anything to do with it.
Drink an Uber.
Don't. We're going to Uber home. And joining us today, the mashup part, is that Dave Merrick is joining us. How you doing, Dave?
Uber's a German word.
We're all in.
Hey, I'm great. How about you?
I'm doing great.
Now,
Diamond Dave, he does Man Seeks Adventure with me, along with Heather Storm from Garage Squad. She was just here. She did Man Seeks Adventure. And then I said, hey, you want to stick around and do Shift? Heather? And she was gone.
That train wreck of a show that you heard last week was the mashup of
it's pretty normal.
I gotta tell you, like, we had a good time.
Matt, everybody likes to look at a train wreck.
We had a good time. You as listeners probably heard a disaster of a show. But it was fun.
Train wreck.
It was fun.
When I laughed so hard that I have to go off the air.
You were like crying and turning bright red, and it was great. But
Heather's got a great laugh too.
I'm glad Dave's here because
Why are you glad Dave's here?
Okay, because we did a bunch of shows at SEMA, and since then I've toured the LA Auto Show, which I want to talk about, and I've driven two very different cars, but both come from Dave's stable. I've driven the Honda Ridgeline and the Acura NSX.
Which one was sportier?
The Ridgeline.
Hey, because I do want to say one thing, though.
The
seriously.
NSX kept shutting off its motor and putting the battery on.
Yeah, Jam PR got a hold of me.
Yeah.
And that's the PR company for the LA Auto Show. Thank you. I would have made it. I'm sorry I didn't, but I had business to do. I had some TV show stuff to do. I didn't blow you off. I didn't blow the L.A. Auto Show. Well, yeah, I did blow the L.A. Auto Show off. I had to do business.
I went.
But that's why you went.
It's called L.A. Mobility now. It's not even the L.A. Auto Show.
I thought that was like a thing at the L.A. Auto Show. I don't know, but
framed it as that's the
I'm
the,
with you. I thought theme. It was like something within the L.A. Auto Show and then find out that it's mobility.
Yeah. So there's a couple of cool cars and things that happen that I want to talk about. I'd love to get your opinion on it, even though you haven't seen it. And I'm sure, Dave, you've been aware of some of these things. Just being in the industry, and then I want to get into some of the cars that we drove recently. But first, we'll start off with I'm just going through my head of where what room I started in and how I moved around.
And before you do, the LA Auto Show has really taken on a new theme over the last 10 years because there was a time when it was kind of like the ugly stepchild. It really got things kind of secondhand, and now it's become a debut point.
Well, because they used to be at the same time as Detroit.
Detroit, yes.
So then you would fight back and forth, but the LA Auto Show was always like you can introduce something really new, like futuristic or new, or something environmental because of California nature. And so I think a lot of the companies, including us, would look at it and say, yes, please. I'm sorry, I'm refueling my iced tea. It's beer, dude. Anyway, so literally we would look at it and go, okay, our environmental story is this. We're going to introduce a Clarity. We're going to introduce this. And then it works perfect. You do ride and drives with environmental cars. Or you can do something to go, look, this is maybe our direction towards the far future, and we can electrify whatever it is and show that too. And I think that most of the companies feel that same way, that it's kind of now become a a kind of a forum to do something that you wouldn't do at any other show because of that. It's flexible. It's L.A. People expect something cool.
And you know what? We introduced Dave, but what we didn't say for our Shift and Steer listeners that don't know, other than being a co-host on Man Seeks Adventure,
that's what I do.
He is also the head of global design for Acura, so he can speak authoritatively about the L.A. Auto
and
Show.
Honda Motor Company.
Because he knows. Yeah. Because he's Honda, Acura,
and
the guy.
Instructor at Art Center as well.
Oh, yeah, but big deal, right?
Where's
you know,
that?
Come on.
What's that?
I don't know. I met some of the Art Center people here at this Radwood thing. Yeah, they were dressed a little goofy. I don't know about that.
The thing is, I here's what I tell you. I'll tell you that even millennial or guys like that, you come in and you go, okay, here we are at this Radwood, and half the people there are people that I know that go that went to school or I had as a teacher. I think this is awesome that all these guys come out to look at this stuff, no matter their age.
I got a mouthful of bread.
This is, you know, this is what podcasting happens when you go to a restaurant. Matt responds
done
with
my statement.
But you know what? I'm gonna do something. I'm going to just digress for just a minute because
you have to go to the bathroom, don't you?
Because no, the we're here at this Radwood event, which what it is actually a car show in Anaheim. Second year they've had it, and it is a mashup of cars built between the 80s and 90s. And we saw Porsches, we saw Toyotas, we saw
Mercedes, BMWs,
we saw VW buses,
all the cheese grater Ferraris.
Well, think yes. 80s kind of Euro-style car.
Now, we met some guys earlier today that had come in from Dallas. Isn't that where they say they're from?
Yeah.
And they stuck out because they said they were fans of ours. They listened to the show. So what if I walk over to their table and ask them what they think? I'll be right back. I'll see if I can
like
do this.
Reporter.
I'm going to try it like you know, the roving reporter guy. So, hey, you guys. You said you were fans of the Shift and Steer show. Now, where'd you come from?
We flew in from Dallas. Flew in last night just for this. Flying back tomorrow. Didn't know what to expect. But here we are. We like the weird shit. We like the...
We like 80s cars.
The 80s.
So name and how much you're pulling down here.
Yeah. So give me your names.
Marco.
This is Polo.
My name is Ron Bagley.
My name is Grant Griffin.
Okay, what was the best thing you saw at the show today?
Multiple DeLoreans.
No, no.
How about you? Dude, that's what I was going to say, man. I've never seen a DeLorean like in real life, and seeing one right up close was amazing.
How about you?
Oh, that Audi Quattro. That was the best one.
There.
Was probably the best of the show.
The best thing I saw was the guys that came up to me from Texas and said that they were fans of Shift and Steer. So, now, you did miss out because you were supposed to say the best thing that you saw at the show was the guys from Shift and Steer. But
oh, thanks for the money. Appreciate it.
So, as Man Seeks Adventure, you guys got to start listening to that podcast. They bought us shots.
Those guys are
just... Oh, whoa, really?
Yeah, we're good to go.
We like shots.
Yeah. So these guys bought us shots. Now, have you ever heard of our other show, Man Seeks Adventure?
The proper answer is yes.
Okay. No, but Man Seeks Adventure is Dave, myself, and Heather Storm from Garage Squad on Velocity. She was the blonde sitting there with us. We were doing an episode of Man Seeks Adventure, and it's called Cars, Bars, Eats, and Adventures. So we travel all over doing Cars, Bars, Eats, and Adventures. It's just an excuse to eat, drink, and drive. So not at the same time, because drinking and driving is not a good thing, and we don't do that. We Uber.
Italy to Paris, the World Rally of Texas next year.
We were there last time.
Perfect.
Well, we've got the button to remind us that you guys gave us. Thanks. Hey, we appreciate the support, guys.
Thank you. Thanks for
thanks for the shots, too.
So Brad now owes me some money for running a commercial on my show.
What, a Man Seeks Adventure commercial?
Yeah.
All right.
Give me 50 cents and a shot.
Up the Irish.
Ah, thanks, guys.
Thanks. We got a shot right here.
Yeah, yo. Oh, my God.
Wow. Well, it's kind of like if a honeybee landed in
rubbing alcohol.
A drunk honeybee. So anyway, I want to talk a little bit about LA Auto Show. The first thing I did was walk into the Porsche room, and they had a couple of debuts. One, they launched the Cayman and the Boxer GTS versions, which is kind of cool because the GTS in the Porsche lineup has always been, for me, it's always been like the most bang for the buck. It's not turbo prices, but it's better than 911 4S
or GT3 or something. The GTS is great. It's you get the stylish, you get the kind of it is bang for your buck, but it's kind of like we just did the TLX A-Spec. So the A-Spec is you get the better looking car with a little bit of suspension stuff, and you're like, I'm way cooler than those other guys. That's kind of what happens, and I think the GTS does that. It's pretty cool.
Would you guys say, I mean, realistically, that car is like in the 80s? You could buy, because we're here at Radwood, I want to compare it to the 80s.
Yeah.
You could buy the turbo, or you could buy the wide body.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is exactly what it is. So it's a little bit more cosmetic, but you still get that. But if you do it correctly, nobody ever thinks, oh, you're a fake turbo, because you're never trying to be that.
Right.
You're just going, I like putting bigger wheels on my car, or I like being the more
span. I like the aesthetics. I didn't care about the twin turbo.
And that's it. I don't need that horsepower.
With Porsche specifically, what I love about the GTS models, what we were saying, Brad, as you were over there doing your shot with the fans over there, was...
Hey, man, I am politicking, okay?
Was the GTS is the great compromise between the most optioned out, like 911 or Panamera or Cayenne, but without getting into the turbo, which is more expensive. However, they released a Cayman GTS and a Boxer GTS, which is the top of the charts for those guys because they don't do
a turbo
version.
Right.
But I'm thinking about this a little bit more, and they had a beautiful red 911 GTS Targa. The Targa, I think, is great because it's kind of a rare car.
I'll tell you, the Targa is great. From a style, I like to shout out to Grant Larson on this, but I mean it is, and I've told him. I said I think that literally from all of them, as the 911's gotten bigger, the new Targa has the most Porsche feel to it to me. I look at it and go, oh my God, that's so great.
Well, it's that stainless steel bar that just kind of sets it off from everything
it's
else.
It's iconic.
Yeah.
But on the GTS, it's black.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's a matte black.
It was on, you know, from...
It was crinkle black on the early cars,
So the early one, so mine was stainless, but then it became black on a lot of them, and so it's heritage, but it has great stance. That car is great.
On the regular GTS, it's, I mean, stainless, but it's more of a brushed aluminum, whatever, and on the GTS, on the normal Targas, it's stainless. On the GTS, it's black, but if you go through the options list, you can turn it back to the stainless look if you want to, but this is what's cool about the GTS when it comes to the 911, is turbo is, first of all, PDK only, okay?
What's that mean?
It's the automatic transmission.
Okay.
The GTS is the top of the chain. You can get a Porsche 911 GTS 4, so you get the all-wheel drive, like the turbo. You get the GTS, which has the Alcantara seats and everything, and the wide body, which is a 4, and then it's the GTS. But the GTS also comes with center lock wheels, and to me, that's a game changer, and manual transmission.
It's a game changer for Jiffy Lube. That's for sure.
For anybody
who... So if you don't know what center lock is, go ahead, Brad.
Because you're going to confuse every tire-changing guy you take it to, unless you take it back to the Porsche dealership who's trained on how to work with those center lock, center hub, single, you know, disconnect.
Bolt,
no
basically.
Lug nuts.
One bolt, like a race car.
But the look is badass.
Oh, look is fabulous.
I mean,
it's a knockoff.
It's a 935.
You could take a 911 GTS or GTS 4, load up the options. You're around 140, 150 grand, still less than a turbo with the similar options.
A GTS 140, 150 fully loaded.
Fully loaded, but with still a manual transmission.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's kind of a thing, you know? And now...
It's cool.
It is cool. So, by the way, the new 718, the Cayman and the Boxster... Gorgeous, and they get like a 30 horsepower pump. There's the Cayman, the Cayman S, and the GTS, which is the top of the line now, which they just released, which is great. And then the other one they released was, well, of course, they have a 911T, which is a lighter weight one. They had the GT2 RS, which set a Nürburgring record, which to me is a little silly because...
Well, it depends on what the record's against.
Right. Again, it's a little silly because as soon as you said it, you know, like 60 days later, somebody
right.
else breaks
60 days
it.
Later,
in a, Mercedes
a Cadillac comes
van.
By and, yeah, and beats good. It, and then a Mercedes yeah. beats it, yeah. and then a guy in a go-kart.
But the most powerful, in terms of horsepower, the most powerful car in their lineup is a Porsche Panamera Turbo S Hybrid.
So the hybrid, because of the electric motors, and that's what we do with the NSX, is you boost, it's like having an extra turbo, because you have the electric motors that give you all that instant acceleration and the extra, like, 60 or 65 horsepower. You're like, oh, my God, dude, and you can do it for each wheel. So then you're at 100 horsepower. It's like,
okay, along
so
that line.
I do want to get into the NSX, but there's some more auto
You've been in
stuff.
The NSX.
Yes. I just drove the NSX
Yes,
recently.
You did, bastard. Hey, but along that same lines, while we're on that, how long will that Tesla keep its crown?
Okay, don't get me started on Tesla.
No, I'm getting you started on that Tesla.
I don't get me started on Tesla because my feeling on Tesla is, and I've said this a bunch on
we
CarCast.
We were with Franz today, by the way.
What? We were with Franz?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's right, the designer of Tesla. Here's the thing is, as a car fan, I love Tesla as a car manufacturer. I love the vehicles that they make. The idea of that amount of performance, the acceleration, I love it. But the business model is crazy to me, and we as consumers are buying into this. I mean, I don't know the right term, but this kind of this sham that he's doing. Like, he announced the Model 3, and now he has to make it, but he can't pay for it. So he just released a Roadster, announced a Roadster, and he wants deposits to make $250
million. It's the Barnum and Bailey thing.
And he wants all these deposits to pay for the Model 3 for a Roadster that he couldn't do yet. And yes, and this has come up on my social media a million times. People keep saying Ponzi scheme, but here's the problem with the Ponzi scheme is if you keep giving him these goddamn deposits,
the Ponzi never ends.
What happened to the traditional car manufacturers that say, we have an idea, we're going to test it out, we're going to make a concept car, not completely done, a concept car, we're going to bring it to the auto shows, we're going to get some reaction from the media and from consumers, and if it makes sense, we're going to make this car or use that as a design influence for future cars.
Have you ever heard of...
He's just charging money.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's our North Star.
Have you heard of Kickstarter?
Yeah.
That's what he's doing. He's crowdfunding cars that don't exist.
Or phone companies. You know, it's like, let's just put it out. If it doesn't work, we'll fix it.
Yeah.
I guess, but yeah.
But my problem is if we keep feeding this machine, then, and again, I don't mean to pick on the car companies, but like, so, you know, Ford comes out with a brand new, okay, GT350, right? And Chevy just announced the Corvette ZR1,
yeah.
which is great. 755 horsepower, crazy aero, wild body kit, wings and canards and all kinds of crap. The dealers are already thinking, perfect. Now I can start charging $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 over sticker, and you're just giving them free money. Because
yeah.
if you wait 6-8 months, you can get the car for a sticker, maybe even less. So if you think about it, Elon Musk... Okay, great. Marketing genius. I get it. I'm not picking on the cars. I love the cars. But the business model is, he's saying, if you want one of my new Roadsters, you can give me a $50,000 deposit now, or if you want a launch edition, which is a $250,000 car, you pay the whole $250,000 up front. And he said the car will come out in 3 years, 2020, which really means 2021 because he's never delivered
right.
a car on time. Okay. Or two. Here's another idea. Take $250,000, go buy a Lamborghini Islero, a 67 Lamborghini Islero, which is beautiful, and you'll
oh,
love it.
Oh, you're going to give me this, oh, and it's going to be worth more in 2021.
No, but I'm saying at least you own something that you can enjoy, and instead of him earning interest on your money.
Matt.
That's what I'm saying. You brought it up today. Here's what you do.
Yeah, you're going to make 50 grand on it.
That's what you do. You go, let's say you have enough money to buy a Miura. Or a Stratos. You go and buy a Stratos and then have somebody that knows technology and put an electric motor in it. Figure out how to electrify that thing. It'd still be cheaper. And you'd have the car now, and you go,
Personally, I don't have a problem with it because I'm announcing right here on the show that we are coming out with a special edition Bond Speed wheel. And if you want the launch edition of these wheels, they are $10,000 to $12,000 a piece. We're not sure quite yet because we don't know how much they're going to cost. So put $10,000 down, and if it's $12,000, you just say you're going to pay $12,000. And now if you don't...
Pay whatever you feel like it says.
You can put $5,000 down now, but you're going to be the first to have this wheel. Now, we're not going to show you the design. Well, maybe we'll show you a little something.
A sneak preview?
It's really not any different than that.
It's not limited edition, though, right? So when you start making it...
No, it's limited to how many we're going to make.
That's right. Exactly. That's the point of a Tesla.
That's what we're talking about today. So we were walking through, and I brought up the XJ6s.
Yes, the V8s.
Yeah, so... But you
I said all the 80s Mercedes to start putting SL. LS motors
so buy
in
buy a 280 SL, put an LS motor in it, you know, or electrify, whatever you want to do. But you could have a cool car that's modern technology. Yeah.
Yeah.
For way less than. Talk to him.
Somebody's really trying to get a hold of Dave, keeps calling on his phone. But anyway, my point is the business model is kind of weird. However, I'm a big fan of the car.
I see Teslas, a car everywhere in my neighborhood.
Yeah. I get it. Like, it's a cool car. But anyway, the point is we started off in the Porsche booth, and there's no denying, great car, great design, great performance. Then we cruised on over, and we saw this new Saleen. It's not a Mustang, which he's known for. And
what kind of car is it?
Okay, so
he did have his supercar.
He did have his S7. Okay. Which
I designed the gauges in that car, by the way.
That's the best part of that car.
Yes, I designed the gauges. Congratulations,
Brad.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's the best
and
part
I even got paid.
Whoa. That's a Christmas miracle. So he's got this new car, which is actually very cool looking. I think a friend of ours, Gary Regal.
Yeah, who worked for me for a while.
I think he did some design on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's who trained him.
Yeah.
He did some design on it. So what happened was is... this is the story as I know it, is a Chinese company, I forgot the name of it, purchased a small German car manufacturer, a Goethe or a Goethe, it's A-G-E-R-T-A,
yep.
Is that right?
Yep.
That
AMG
right.
Mercedes?
No, a Goethe. Yeah.
So they purchased a Goethe, and they made sort of a small, almost like a Lotus Elise type car. It actually looks very similar to an Alfa Romeo 4C.
Okay.
They purchased that car company, and then they called Saleen and asked them to be sort of a design and engineering consultant, which makes sense for them. They've got a lot of race history, and almost the way that Lotus has reached out to that kind of, several times.
Let me get the funding.
Let me get the Chinese funding is...
Yeah.
Everybody, why wouldn't you? You think about it. Other than Elon, as we talked about, go get Chinese funding. Why wouldn't you?
I'd rather he get Chinese funding than take my money now and hold on for 5 years and earn the interest.
But it's like, well, he doesn't want to lose money. He wants to make money. So that's the deal.
And he wants to say he's all American and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, so Saleen teamed up. This Chinese company bought a Goethe and hired Saleen to sort of redesign it. And then Saleen came back and said, we kind of like what you're doing, but... to sort of achieve the performance of the style that you want, you kind of have to start fresh. I don't know how fresh they're really starting, but anyway, the end result is a small kind of 4C size Lotus Elise size car, two-seater, rear engine, rear mid.
4C.
Yeah. Like a 4C, and I believe it's going to have a turbo six-cylinder. Around 450 horsepower, 0-60 in 3.5 seconds.
Is this a what kind of motor?
It's
a Ford motor.
No,
or?
That's the thing is they're saying it's their motor.
Okay,
that they're building
so they're
it from scratch.
Casting their own block.
They may have designed it. I assume they to partner with everybody else, like somebody like a Dart or somebody, and say,
yeah,
we want a motor. Hire a turbo company, and it's going to be manufactured in both the U.S. and in China. and it's going to be about $100,000, which really kind of puts it in the 9/11 territory and opens up the possibility.
And what kind of styling? How would you describe it?
It looks like a 4C.
Okay.
It looks like an Alfa Romeo 4C.
All right.
With honestly, with a little bit of that Celine flair to it. The one that they had there, you know, they had like a vent.
So a 4C with Fox body?
So, you know, like a 4C has like a quarter panel vent.
Yeah.
The Celine has the quarter panel vent with like three slats in it because
yeah.
It's a Celine trademark.
Yes,
there.
It's got his.
So the prototype that they
Gilsey
have.
He calls them.
Yeah.
Yes.
What's interesting is this is a fully functional prototype. They did their videos, all the testing and driving, so it's not just a car with no interior. It's done in their beryllium orange.
Okay.
It's interesting to me, and I get Celine is like been out of business a bit of times. There's good stories, there's bad stories, but there's a little bit of legacy there. So I spoke with them, and their new marketing guy is
okay. Dave's showing me a photo of it right now.
He's a friend of mine. We should put a photo somewhere. It's in my gallery. But
yeah,
you check
I can see
here,
yeah.
Our social media. So they're gonna turn this prototype into a press car, and we're gonna get it. And we're gonna drive it.
Boy, it's really got the rear of it looks a little bit like a Ferrari Modena, you know,
which a 4C has.
Yeah,
I mean, an Italian style, which
yep.
is emotional. But yeah, I mean, no, it's
anyway. So that's kind of interesting. And then as I walk through the hall,
that was a Modena. No.
So as I walked down to the hall, I went by Lincoln, and I saw the new Lincoln Navigator. And let me just tell you, that thing's pimp, dude. Like, that's the Lincoln Continental, which I kind of like.
They re-evaluated their nomenclature and things.
And they needed to.
Yeah, they did.
And they have a small SUV, MKZ or C or D or whatever the hell. And they got rid of the name, and it's the Lincoln Nautilus, which makes sense.
Yeah. It's...
Okay, yeah.
The new Lincoln Navigator is nice.
Yeah.
The interior, the seats are the 30-way, like, adjustable seats from the Lincoln Continental. The interior is gorgeous. They're doing Black Edition cars, which come with all of their, like, concierge service. If anything wrong with the car, they come to you. They take care of it.
That's how you do it. As a premium brand, that's what we do. You make a good product. But you also have to have the user experience. So when you're buying the car, when you're owning the car, what do you get out of it? And people want to be – if you pay for a premium car, you want them to take care of you, right?
Yeah. Well, Lincoln's really taking it to another level. They've got where they are getting, like, access to events if you own a Lincoln.
That's
and
right.
you can go in and park free if you own a Lincoln, you know, like that.
This is exactly the right direction that Lincoln needs to be going in. When you look at that Navigator and compare it to the Ford Expedition, it's a night and day difference. You honestly think, I'm okay with spending $100,000 on a Lincoln Navigator. I don't think that's what it costs, but maybe the Black Edition and everything on it. But it's okay to do it. It's nice.
Well, we did, you know, in Florida, we did the boat show. And we had outboard, you know, we do outboard motors. We do the best outboard motors. And we had...
I've never seen an Acura outboard motor.
We would do the Honda outboard, but we did the big one. And if you have an NSX, you can get the Acura motor, and it's painted in the same color as your NSX. And that was kind of a promotion going, hey, if you have an NSX and you have the coolest cigarette boat, let's paint your motor that matches your car. So every company should be thinking about that. But us particularly, it's like that's kind of concierge service. That's like... Well, go above and beyond and say, hey, let's match this.
I mean, quite honestly, I know a lot of wealthy people, and those people, what they always want is, and I've had them literally say it to me, is that, oh, so you can't buy these tickets, right, Brad? And
yeah,
I'm like,
sure.
That's right.
Yeah.
They want things that can't, exactly.
Yeah.
They want things that can't be
that's
purchased.
It.
They want access
yeah.
because they can buy anything.
I want to be special.
If it's available to buy, they can buy it. So they want access.
Yeah. And in Florida, a lot of them have boats also. They have an NSX and a boat. So it's like, you know what? Let's give you a motor that matches your car. And you're like, dude, look at me. I'm Synergy. And it's great.
Yeah, but that's fun.
That's what?
That's fun. That's fun. Exclusive access that nobody can else get to. That's kind of fun. And if you guys can sort of build that into...
That's what I mean, yeah. You make an experience, and then they feel like they're special. Even if I won't say this, but if 100,000 people do it, so what? They still feel special, all of those people. So you've got to get them to have some... What is your value to the customer compared to all the other companies? And that's part of it. It's like we, as Honda Motor and Acura, we have access to a motor or a jet or an NSX. So you go, you could have all of these because you're the guy, and we'll kind of concierge or custom fit your lifestyle to what you want. And it's within reason, but with a jet, I want this. And then with the NSX, you go, well, I love this car. What else could I do with it? And then, if you have a boat or if you have, I mean, honestly, we haven't done it yet. But, if you have a gardener and he has a Honda lawnmower, we'll paint it, color your car. Oh, why not?
Dude, I want that. I have a gardener, and I want him to have the same color as my Acura NSX.
Which is funny because I want a free Honda jet. And I want it painted the same color as the NSX I don't have.
So Matt's been driving the NSX, but next you want to fly a Honda jet. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I went from Honda Ridgeline to Acura NSX, and I feel like Honda jet.
Dave, I don't even need to fly one. I can just ride in one. Okay. I'm fine with that.
How about that?
All right, let's talk about the NSX. There's more auto show stuff, but let's talk about the NSX. Okay. First of all,
I just got a smiley face from my wife on the text. That means I'm gold. I'm good. So don't worry.
It means she got all your shit. You're divorced.
That means I better go now.
She's on eBay right now. Was selling Brad stuff.
Yeah, she's at Brad stuff
remember
for sale.
Remember that whole shit that Brad had in the last podcast? Yeah, that's all gone. Yeah.
Okay. So give me a little bit of the specs on the NSX. You're going to know it much better than I will, and then I'll give you my random opinion about the car.
It's beautiful. That's my spec.
Okay, first of all, I think the design is outstanding, and the pictures are great. But when you see the car, it's better in person, and it's small. And I love that about the car. It's 911 style, 911 size. You know,
yeah.
You know what? Like it's actually bigger than we intended, because we turned the motor like halfway through the development. So we could do the twin turbo. So we did the twin turbo and then added the electric motor. And literally we churned the motor so the wheelbase got longer. The car got a little longer, but from a proportion standpoint, it's better. But it's still super tight.
But it wasn't like it rolled off the assembly line and you went, wait, it's bigger than we intended.
No. But when you're doing a development of a car, you plan, you do all this stuff, and then you're like, and this is the beauty of the NSX in stories, is that... You're going down a path. We could have just said, well, we already planned it. This is what we're doing. Just keep going. We'll build them. But we said, no, it's not exactly what it should be. Let's do it right.
So one of the things that stood out to me was it weighs like 3,850, something like that. And I'm going to explain to you why that's very light.
Explain that to me.
Yeah, okay. But first of all, here it is this is a twin-turbo V6. It's rear engine, rear mid, and then it has three electric motors. It has an electric motor on each front wheel, and it has an electric motor on the transmission. And what's great is that one on the transmission is when you get into this car, any turbo lag that you would get on any other car, that electric
the
motor
immediate
ter- takes
the immediate
up for
electrical
it,
does it.
As a matter of fact, the first like I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but the first when you launch this car hard, the first tenth. Maybe 0.2 is almost all electric motors to take up any
zero delay. And the thing is that zero delay is you think of it like as a slot car or something. You take off immediately, and the turbos are kicking in. But it's also torque vectoring. You have torque vectoring that when you're through curves and everything like that, those electric motors are driving you through that and sensing if you need to speed up one wheel or the other wheel . That car, I can't tell people enough that you have to drive it, which you did, but you also have to understand that the experience of driving an NSX is so different than anything else because of that. Because you feel like a lot of cars have four-wheel drive, a lot of cars have turbos, a lot of cars have powerful engines. But this one, with the torque vectoring and the way the it senses your mistake, I guess. It corrects, and you're thinking, I can't screw this up. I kept trying to. When I drive it, I mean, I've driven in the wet.
So each wheel has computer sensing to compensate as you come into
exactly
a curve
what
or whatever.
Yeah, and it goes, you need to speed up this wheel to go
right,
through this
corner. To throw it this way,
And you really, you can still do it if you're like, you know, Helio Castroneves or Graham Ray Hall or somebody. But I'm pretty good. I've done Jim Hall. I've done Bondurant. I've done all those. But I couldn't get it to do stupid shit. I mean, I'm literally
Matt,
going,
at 140, when you throw it into a curve, how is it?
It's fantastic, which I did on Venice Boulevard. But
okay, good.
But here's the thing is we have some phenomenal all-wheel drive cars out there, but they're mechanical all-wheel drive. Even with all the computers behind it, you have your Porsche 911 Turbo, you have a Nissan GTR. With the NSX, of having the gas engine power in the rear wheels, and then you have independent electric motors for the front wheels. Even when you make a U-turn in a GTR at low speeds, you feel that weird tired scrubbing that's
right,
going on.
Right.
Because it's
let me take us back, because we're at Radwood this weekend. It's like having a Dana with a Detroit locker in the rear. When you turned around, it went dunk, like a skip.
There's only so much you can do on the mechanical level. When you get into the computer electronic level and the motors are completely independent of each other, if you think about it, when you're getting into a turn and you're turning those front wheels, that, like if you're turning left, your right wheel needs to spin faster than your left wheel. And with the electric motors, it can do that. And also, if you're getting crazy into a turn, it can trail brake for you by adding basically like engine braking to electric motor.
So have either of you literally like jumped on it when you're trying to take
absolutely
a 180
over,
and how
and
does
over
it go?
I've done it in puddles.
Okay,
I have done it in puddles trying to break it loose, and it just corrected immediately. And I'm like, this is not good, but it's great. But you literally, if you really, really push it, of course, any car you could probably do stupid shit.
Yeah,
but I have found even like we've driven it at TRC, Mid Ohio, things like that, with water. And it just will not break free. I've tried.
A human being can eventually.
It can make you a race car driver.
Yeah.
That's kind of the deal. It makes you better than you are.
Okay, you say that. It can make you a race car driver. But one of the things that I noticed about the car is I just drove the McLaren 720S. I love that car. It's not in a price range that compares with an NSX. It's faster than an NSX. And it's got a crazy sound. But it's got all this weird supercar gadgetry. Like when you pull into a parking spot or a speed bump, you have to raise the nose, but the raising the nose is not a one-click thing. You have to like activate a system and then hit a button and then wait. When you get into the Acura, some people go, hey man, the entertainment system of the Acura is the same in any Honda or Acura. Okay, but there's a simplicity to it that makes it simple.
It's actually not, because Elliot Shiner is ELS, and he tunes all of the cars, but he's tuned the NSX to make sure that that's above and beyond.
And he wears gold lamé pants.
Okay, but when you get in that car, it's super easy to drive, and it's comfortable, and it's easy to drive, and it is incredibly fast.
It's basically like the original NSX.
Where it was the everyman supercar, because it's like, dude, I could drive this to the grocery store and not even think about it, because you jump in, jump out. The windshield wipers work the same as, you know, every other car I know. But it is tuned towards the buyer. I mean, it really is. It's like, we don't want to just do a value supercar. We're doing what we think a supercar should be, and that's why it's so great.
Dave, what year did the original NSX launch?
The 91 was the auto show, Chicago, I think, and then.
Because I remember when the car
like
came
91 through 2004.
Yeah. Well, it lasted a long time with the Zanardi edition, and you know you keep going, but yeah, it was
because like 91, 92, when they very first came out, I was still living down in Newport Beach, and it was like, I love those cars. I was like, oh, my God, there's an NSX.
I still love those cars.
A couple here today.
And I lived at the end of 17th Street in an area called, I don't know, whatever it was called. And
end of 17th Street.
End of 17th Street. And one night, I'm standing out by my house, and I see one zoom by about 85 miles an hour. Well, I knew at the end of that street, there was a very sharp turn. And all of a sudden I heard, he did not have that ingenuity that we have today.
Didn't have the electric motors. Ouch.
He wrapped that sucker around a pole. And, of course, because I wanted to aid someone in need, I ran up there. Found out
with the camera.
Found out that the dentist was okay, and then I was checking out the car and the aluminum body and everything like that.
I mean, it was the safest supercar then.
Yeah, it was amazing because it was the first chance to really check one out.
That car, that first NSX is the first car to have an A mark, to actually have an Acura badge. Because prior to that, Legends, everything had Acura lettering.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
so it was the first one to have the little Star Trek logo?
That's interesting. I didn't know that. What did you or your team do on this car? How are you involved?
So my role is, as at the time, I was global creative director. So we oversaw the styling of the interior, exterior, and making sure that from the concept model on, that the development part of it was almost all of that car. You said it's beautiful and it's kind of small, but all of it is done with... That, you know, you say form follows function, designer's dream. That car, every part of it is that. It's all aeroed, it's all wind tunnel, it's all literally designed for the function of the car. So if people look at it and go, well, that's beautiful, you think that's the greatest compliment we can have, because it was all done for purpose, literally. I mean, if you look at the original show car, the intake on the body side, that's so iconic. That got twice as big as it was on the original one and things like that. So we were from stem to stern on the, you know, from clay model to wind tunnel to seeing it on the road.
I heard there's a little bit of a debate on showing the engine versus not showing the engine, because the engine in the back needs to sit very low. And like something on the McLaren, if you think about it, if you pull the McLaren engine out, the engine's very low, and the intake manifold is a long runner intake manifold, and it's like 18 inches tall. It's like a huge, just so you can see the manifold.
Some of that, you know, the turbo plenums come up like that and stuff. But I, at the time, it was kind of like our culture. We looked at it and went, you know, if it's down there, then the people that will buy it or understand it will know it's low center of gravity. And it's kind of F1 technology, so let's live with that and kind of celebrate it in certain ways, which we did with the mesh and stuff around it. But literally, it was an issue. Like, no, I want this big, huge motor in the back. It's like, well, we're not. That's not us. It's like, no, we made it low so that your car is going to be badass. So that,
it's function over
it's
form
totally
in that
function.
In that point.
Totally function, and we tried to style it so that those plenums coming up for the turbos and everything were celebrated. But it is. It is cool to look at it and go, you know what? I'm glad that it's down that low. And you think, dude, it's like a go-kart. You know, that's what it is.
I got to tell you, like, if you're shopping around for Porsche 911, maybe Jaguar F-Type R, SVR, even Corvette ZR1, do yourself a favor and take a look at this NSX. I think you're going to find that it is one of the easiest, most comfortable supercars out there, and it's fantastic. And the way it, here's the other thing, is one of the features that annoys me in cars today is the auto start stop function.
Idle stop.
You know, it annoys me, and
it's,
I turn it off
every
all the
car on it. It's like you think, my car stopped. What's going on? It stalled.
And
you know?
You feel like it's broken. I don't know what's going on. And so, in the NSX, in its normal mode, which is a sport mode, It switches between EV mode and the engine. But here's all the difference in the world is when you hear the engine go off and it's in EV mode, it still moves forward. Yeah. So, you know, like in that start stop function where like you always get to the stoplight and then your motor shuts off and then you want to creep forward like 6 inches, it's got to fire up and go again.
Here's an insider. The insider is that we called it stealth mode forever. I was like, put it in stealth mode, but no, we didn't call it that. It's just silent mode, but stealth mode was awesome. It's like, oh, stealth mode, let's go. The first time I ever saw it, I saw one pull in on the test track in Japan, and it was an early prototype, and it was in silent mode. And I looked, and I thought, I'm going to hate this. And it went past, and I literally turned to a friend of mine. We were standing there, and he says, "What do you think?" Eric Berkman, who was head of Acura. It comes in, and I said, "Dude, that was like rolling sculpture right there." Because you couldn't hear it, and it was awesome. It was like...
The difference is it moves. Anyway, yeah. Listen, I know we're running out of time. We're in this bar. They're getting ready to kick us out. Maybe we can pick this up again next week or whatever.
The Ridgeline.
Because I want to talk about the Ridgeline.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the Ridgeline. That's right.
I like this, and it was one of the most talked about things on social media when we had it. But anyway, again, I know they're kicking us out, so I'm going to wrap some things up.
Hey, where can they find us on social media?
Yeah, we appreciate you guys listening. We're at shiftandsteer.com, and of course, we're on iTunes. We're on the Adam Carolla app and the Podcast One app. And I've got a photo gallery up on my page, which I'll share on Shift and Steer Facebook page. So go to facebook.com/shiftsteermedia, and you can see like 120 images from the LA Auto Show. And I've got a bunch of images of the Acura NSX as well. So definitely check that out. I would say Dave, always
a pleasure. Yeah, thanks, Dave. And
thank
you so much. Everybody, listen to Man Seeks Adventure, because we did a mashup and Matt was on that. So on the next edition of Man Seeks Adventure, you'll hear Matt joining myself, Brad Fanshaw, Dave Merrick, and Heather Storm. So check it out. And I do want to remind everybody that we were doing shots, we were drinking beer, we were doing everything on here, but don't drink and drive. We don't drink and drive, we don't condone it, and we surely don't think it's cool, so don't do it. We're going to Uber home. And everybody, thanks for listening to Shift and Steer. I'm Brad Fanshaw.
I'm Matt DeAndrea.
And I'm guest Dave Merrick.
That's right, and Aaron Hagar is digging out of the snow.
Yep.
See ya.
If you like this show, also listen to Man Seeks Adventure and Dixon's Wild Ride. You can find Man Seeks Adventure at manseeksadventure.com.